One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, HYPERTHETICAL.
Come get up. Beware, I live. IGN GameScoop.
You're good. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week, Justin Davis, Scoop. Brian Altano, Vince Ingenito is here.
Oops.
We've got a great show planned for you this week. We're going to be talking about Batman Arkham Knight. I think we'll play another round of Video Game 20 Questions.
Oh,
that was a big hit.
Gracious. Nice.
But first, let's turn our eyes to Konami. Long-running long-running video game publisher and developer, one of the oldest, yeah. One of the originals, mm-hmm. One of the most beloved.
Pachinko manufacturer.
Yep.
Established right. In 1973 as Konami Industry Company Limited, started making jukeboxes, wanted to get into arcades, and finally started having success in the arcades with Frogger in 1981.
Yeah.
Scramble, another big arcade hit for those. Mm. But now, the future of their games business is in question.
Yeah, I mean, I bring up their pachinko business, and that's a joke, but that's been, like, slot machines and pachinko machines. I don't know the exact percentage.
That's the bright side of their...
Yeah, huge, that's the bread and butter for them.
That's, like, where all their money is, and then this video games are just, like, this kind of side deal for them, side business.
Yeah, yeah, they're massive in Japan. They don't have anything... Like, the company as a whole has nothing to worry about, I don't think. It's a bigger disaster...
Konami games.
That's what I'm saying. It's a bigger disaster for us as fans than it is for Konami the whole as a corporation.
Yep. Yeah, I think so. We found out they officially canceled Silent Hills, mm-hmm. Which is a game everyone was really stoked for.
Yeah. Guillermo del Toro and Kojima and Norman Reedus.
What a powerhouse team.
Awesome. Everyone loved the PT demo.
Yep.
However much money they had sunk into development of that game is gone, right? Because now they can't sell the game, make it back.
Yeah, by the time people watch this, you will not be able to get it anymore.
You gotta download that PT demo while you can.
Yep.
You can't if you're watching this.
If you're watching this, you missed your chance.
I thought you had like 2 or 3 days.
No, I think it's tomorrow, the 29th.
The 29th.
Yeah, is it?
When it's over.
Recording this on the 28th. So if you're watching this today.
Yeah.
Get in there right
get
now.
Do it.
Pause the show.
Go.
Don't come back. No, come back.
Please do. No, wait. Yes, definitely.
Definitely come back.
There's all this turmoil with Kojima. Like, was he fired? Is he staying on in some capacity?
My favorite part is how they removed his name from all their, like, a Hideo Kojima game and then put it back on. They took him all off, and then everyone was like, oh, that's a little weird. Mm. But then they put it back on the website and all the other places.
And then they also delisted themselves from the New York Stock Exchange this week.
They're still traded on a couple other foreign stock exchanges.
I think London and Tokyo.
And I actually didn't know that much about this. I had to read up on it. And it turns out that just regulatory filings and just like the finances and paperwork of being listed on a stock exchange costs you many millions of dollars each year. So it sounds like it's just a cost saving. They said very, very few people were trading Konami stock on this stock exchange, and it was kind of expensive. And so it sounds like kind of a desperate move, like just to save a few million bucks. But, you know, I guess I can understand it. Like, if it's not getting you anything and you're still traded elsewhere, it's kind of like, well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also part of our the alarms go off in our heads when we hear things like that, but we forget that we're just one market, you know, like, and this is a company that operates, you know, primarily the bread and butter of its businesses in Japan. So.
It is. It does remind me of when Sony sold off a bunch of their actual buildings.
Yeah.
And it's like, whew, that's when you know you're in, like, maybe it's not like five alarm territory yet, but things are not good.
Sure.
So I wanted to take a look back because things have certainly changed for Konami. I think in the NES days, probably Konami and Capcom were probably the biggest third party
synonymous with
supporters,
with,
right?
Yeah, with quality to me.
So I put together a list here of some classic Konami games, which makes up 42 reasons we would miss Konami. If Konami games, if Konami stopped making games.
Now I'm sad.
Can I ask you a question?
Pretty good.
Yeah. Does this count Ultra?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Anyone that doesn't know, Konami was making so many games for the NES back in the day. Nintendo, in order to attempt to manage quality control, would limit the amount of games any publisher could release in a year. So they wouldn't just spam it with shovelware, which makes sense. So Konami was like, oh, we'll start another company and release games.
Really smart.
Yeah.
It's a really smart thing to do. And it was just so they could keep putting out more and more games, which is really, it's the opposite of the problem they have now.
Yeah.
Who is this Ultra?
I don't know. Like, that's something you can never get away with.
We've never heard of them.
Their logos were similar. Their box art designs were similar. Their games were similar. They just had that. Yeah. They all had the same feel.
I wonder if they were fooling anybody.
So before we get into the 42, I wonder, do we have time? Can anyone name a couple of Konami classics that you're hoping are on that list?
Well, I can name one that's a classic that's also shit, and that's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It's not. You really think it's...
original?
You're talking about the original side-scroller for NES?
Yes.
I don't think it's garbage. You're right, it's not as good as people remember it. It's some really super frustrating, like arbitrarily frustrating levels.
Sure, that game gets impossible, but it was still a good like NES game.
I mean, the sequel was great, the arcade port. I mean, people look back at that and they don't really like it, but I actually thought like that was one of the first times I was able to take a game from the arcade and play it at home, just like that.
What about Turtles in Time? On Super Nintendo. Now that was...
Yeah. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just so you know, I try not to spam, like when they release TMNT games in the arcades, NES, Super Nintendo, so I try not to spam everything.
Yep. But yeah, I've got one I want on there that I'll be disappointed if it's not, but let's see if it's there.
You wanna say it ahead of time?
No, I'm gonna keep it in my pocket and we'll see what happens.
If we start with their arcade lineup, Frogger came out in 1981, and that really put Konami on the map. 1982 was Time Pilot, which I think is an underrated classic arcade game.
Yeah,
totally. I love that game. Top-down shooter, sort of like a fixed-screen shooter, whereas you go through different time periods to shoot down different, like, biplanes and then aliens. And
yeah, that super cool. Game.
Gyrus was 1983.
Excellent, love Gyrus.
Very, very cool game. TMNT was 1989. X-Men was 1992.
Oh, man.
And then there's this game. They did a G.I. Joe game, which we've got footage of here, that I think is...
Computer, play B-roll.
It was missed. This is an awesome game, because it's a four-player game. A run and gun shooter. You just run into the distance and shoot like the forces of Cobra.
Is this a space harrier?
It looks a little bit like space harrier, except you
can't fly, but yeah, it's that type of game.
I loved games like this when I was a kid, especially the...
Look at all that stuff coming in the distance.
This is a four-player co-op arcade game, which is pretty awesome.
And you got the classic G.I. Joe vehicles in there.
Yep.
That's really cool.
It's not canon, though, because those lasers are actually hitting somebody, which never happened on G.I. Joe.
No one has ever successfully hit a shot on G.I. Joe.
And then maybe people forget that Konami started the whole music game thing.
Right.
In 1997, they released Beatmania in the arcades, and they also did DDR.
Yep.
Yeah, DDR was massive. Yeah, huge. Just printed money for a couple decades in the arcades and at home.
Yep.
Did you guys get into that?
Not at DDR. Home? I mean, I played it, but I wasn't like super into it.
Yeah.
I like being in Japan, and you go into an arcade, and there's like hardcore DDR players in any arcade in Japan.
Oh, it's insane. DDR was one of the first big video game movements where I was like,
nope.
Not for me. Like, I'm going to watch the rest of the world go crazy over this, and I'm going to sit back and keep playing Zelda and shooting games and all this.
I'm trying to think. I've done, like, dumb Just Dance stuff at, like, I don't think I've ever actually played DDR. Ever.
Really?
I can't think of a time, no.
Yeah. It was one of those things I just wasn't into.
I had the track and field mat for the NES. Does that count?
The power pad is kind of,
That get a lot of use?
We bought it when I was in high school, so we would have parties and drink, and, I mean, it's not...
Don't do this at home, kids.
Yeah, no.
I brought the power pad to college with me in New York City.
Exactly.
My downstairs neighbors were not happy about that.
No, yeah.
Power pad lost all luster for me when I realized I could literally just jump off the pad and stay there to like just totally cheat through.
Yeah. They thought you were still in the air.
Right, exactly.
Because a lot of kids are able to jump for 5 whole minutes.
And looking back now, like, where was the QA department on that one? Like, no one thought of that? I don't know.
All right, moving to the NES. Gradius was 1986.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Castlevania was also 1986.
Goodness gracious!
Now you're getting into my era right here. Those are two of my favorite Konami games.
After Gradius came.
How about this one in 1987? How about Goonies 2?
Goonies 2? Yep.
The unofficial sequel to the movie Goonies,
which my good friend Ryan Scott loves, and I hate this game. We've been debating this for years. I don't know why he loves it so much. It's a sequel to the movie,
that includes the same villains.
Who
were arrested.
Yeah, which makes no sense, and you have to save a mermaid.
Yeah.
And the song that plays the entire game is an 8-bit remix of a Cyndi Lauper song.
Which appeared in the Goonies film.
In the usual Goonies. Yeah.
Look how it's like this crazy combination of like 2D side-scrolling and like almost an adventure game.
It's really cool.
There's a lot of NES games that did that.
Weird game. Russian Attack was also in 1987. Attack. I love Russian Attack, great soundtrack. And Double Dribble. So like I've never been into sports, but as a kid I would play sports video games like that in Tecmo Bowl. And
Double Dribble was great. Yeah.
When they went to that close in shot of like you doing the dunk,
I was like,
the graphics.
So another game that's probably on your list, Blades of Steel. Like that, there was just an era back then of
with the pass, with the pass.
No one knows what that guy's saying. Lift the pass, lift the pass. If you're watching this and you know, this has puzzled me for decades. But they made a lot of really cool arcade sports games, and I was in the same boat where I didn't care about sports games. I certainly don't now, but back then I played tons of them. They were really fun.
Yeah. Castlevania 2. Did I mention that one?
No.
Nope.
Awesome.
No.
That
yep. just Simon's Quest.
Took a relatively simple like side-scrolling game and turned it into this kind of open world
side-scrolling RPG. Made it more like an adventure game.
Secretly a bad game.
Well, yeah.
I agree. None of us knew that at the time because it was amazing. But
I know. I mean, I had Nintendo Power, so I could like reference what to do. But if you didn't have that, good luck.
You had no idea what was going on in that game if you didn't have somebody helping you.
Everything was conveyed in this very obtuse manner, or not at all.
It was
really rough.
Life Force, the sequel to Gradius.
Life Force,
the sequel to Gradius. Improved it in every way. I like the bosses in the game.
I want to talk about Gradius is really, it was really, really smart for its time. Like, it wasn't just a 2D shooter. Like, it had that power-up system that like, made you...
It gave you, you had to choose how to spin your power-ups.
Right, and like, it was really risky, like, which direction you were going to go with your power-ups and which one you were going to, like, cash in and get, you know, lock in, like, a certain power-up. And the... what were they called? The little trailing
options.
Options.
Which is kind of a weird. Like, why did they?
And Life Force kind of improved on that in every capacity. It was two-player co-op. It had these top-down and side-scrolling levels, and it sort of felt it was paced very. It was like Contra with spaceships, basically, because you went from top-down to left and right. And it had a couple levels. I don't know if you guys remembered where it would just get incredibly fast.
Like especially at the end, it's like the self-destruct, escape the self-destruction.
Yep. It's probably in my top five NES games, one of my favorites.
They did Top Gun,
yep.
The game where it's impossible to land.
Refueling was hard too. Refueling was super hard.
Everything in that game was impossible.
Yeah.
And Metal Gear, of course. Now,
I heard of that game.
Asleep.
I like the original Metal Gear. Oh, yeah, because we were having an argument about History of Awesome. And I was saying the original Metal Gear was really good for its era, and everyone else in the room said that game's trash. I'm like, no way, the original Metal Gear is good. Like,
for its era or now?
For the time, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good NES game. Like, it was stealth, and it had all these different, like, you had to plant the
C4. It was nothing like it at the time.
I'll give you that.
And it was also, like, epic. Like, it just kept going.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was just a really cool original game at the time. And obviously it's been eclipsed in every capacity, but especially if you look at the Game Boy Color version of that game, which is way better.
Oh, it was really good. The Ghost Babel?
Ghost Babel.
It's like the original, it was like kind of an open world. Like you're just set in the jungle and then you have to navigate this semi-open map and figure out how to get into the compound.
Yep. And it was just great. Full of English.
I feel asleep. Yeah. The truck have started to move.
So just to recap, in 1987 alone, we got Goonies 2, Russian Attack, Double Dribble, Castlevania 2, Life Force, Top Gun, and Metal Gear.
That's amazing.
In just that 1 year.
That's amazing.
That's because they made a basketball. They're like, where have you been for the last 3 weeks? Hey, I made a basketball game. Yeah. It's ready to go.
All right, in 1988, the NES port of Contra arrived,
right?
Which is how most people know that game.
Yep.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know if I've ever played the arcade one.
The aforementioned Blades of Steel, which I love the up-close like fist fights.
Yeah, they're so good.
And The Adventures of Bayou Billy, also of questionable quality, I think.
Very questionable, but it was interesting that it mixed like side-scrolling beat-em-up with light gun levels.
Yeah, yeah. It's insane. Wow, I just crazy about that.
That's
yeah.
when you, as a child, you first started to you learn two things: one, that the NES seal of quality didn't always mean something, and two, that the Konami or Ultra logos didn't always mean quality.
And the really bad voice production.
The Adventures of Boy Yeah.
Skate or Die.
Yes.
Oh yes.
Badass love game. Skate or Die.
Skate really hard game too.
Yeah, it was
right. Yeah. Castlevania 3, of course. Mm-hmm. Well, Base Wars was an Ultra published game.
Yeah.
Baseball with robots.
Awesome box art, by the way, on that one.
And yeah. Konami,
I loved Base Wars.
I liked it a lot too. Yeah. And Konami published King's Quest V on the NES, huh. which is how I played it.
Really?
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that.
In 1992. On the Game Boy, they did Motocross Maniacs, which is like an early, very early game, maybe a launch game.
Yeah.
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 Sort of like Excitebike with a lot of crazy stunts.
Yeah.
That was a cool game. And of course, all of the Castlevania portable games on GBA started with Circle of the Moon.
Such a great bunch of games.
Which is a really interesting story behind that game. When they were developing it, I believe that the Game Boy was still supposed to be backlit. So the game is like...
Oh,
it's dark
actually
as hell.
It's very dark. Mm. And then when you actually went to play it on GBA, which wasn't backlit at all, it was like pitch black.
Yeah.
So you could only play that game underneath lights or worm lights.
You needed the worm light. Yeah, needed the worm light.
I see. I heard that when they were developing it, they were using, you know, development kits, right? And so they were seeing it on a screen,
like way brighter, right?
And then when they actually they never actually tested the game or tested it very little on an actual GBA.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a bunch of launch games at the GBA, like Konami Crazy Racers, which was their remix of Mario Kart, but it had Snake in it and the pilot from Gradius and Dracula, like a chibi Dracula from Castlevania.
And is it Mystical Ninja?
Yeah, he's in it.
Yeah. Mystical Ninja is
another Konami game.
Is another Konami game. Yeah, so Mystical Ninja was in that.
So Circle of the Moon was so dark, and they got criticized for it so much that Harmony of Dissonance was like really, really bright.
It's like neon. Yeah.
But now, if you play any of those on like a DS or somewhere that does have a blacklit, it looks awful.
Yep.
They just can't win.
Where was it? Oh, yeah. Castlevania Dawn of Sorrow was the first one to go on to DS in 2005. And Contra 4 was 2007, developed by WayForward.
Yep.
Contra 4 was underrated.
Yeah. It was a late DS, late in the life DS game. Maybe people it had lost its luster, maybe. Going back to the Super Nintendo, Gradius 3 was a launch title, which I think was pretty good, except it had a lot of flicker.
It was like it had a lot of flicker, but so did its main competitor, Super R-Type. Also had pretty much the same problem. They're both the same kind of slow-paced side-scrolling shooters, and they both suffered from this.
Yeah, it was actually weird to me, as someone who grew up on Life Force, to go and play R-Type.
Yeah.
Because it was so
much slower.
So much slower, and so much more punishing in terms of like checkpoints and stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah. You die in R-Type.
You die in real life.
That's right. That's how it works.
In 91, they did Super Castlevania 4.
Yep.
Which is Castlevania 4, just with Super so in the front good. Of it, yeah. I loved how that was the first time you could swing your whip around.
Just hold it and kind of wiggle it in the air. It was so weird.
And the Mode 7 effects.
Oh,
they actually made good use of it.
Do you remember the first time you were standing on a platform in that game and the whole room started rotating?
The platform was upside down
and you fell on spikes cathedral. And you're like, I didn't even know you could do that. That's
you're like, oh my God. Yeah, they actually used it to open up new avenues of gameplay at the time. It was really, really fascinating.
Yep.
Music's incredible in that.
Oh, yeah.
In 92, they released a different type of shooter for them, Axlay. Did you ever play this
love
one?
Love Axlay.
This is a very different, like, rolling world shooter.
Yep, and it also has side-scrolling levels as well. And you can change your loadout, some really good sound design and music. This is one of my... And it's interesting because you see from the video, you can actually scroll off-screen. Like, the sides of the screens are not the barriers. You can keep going left and right further.
This predates it, but this reminds me of the Final Fantasy VII Overworld.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
And I think there was an HD remake on Xbox Live Arcade, PSN, a few years ago.
I'm going to check that out.
I remember that, right? That same year was also Contra 3.
Contra 3, The Alien Wars.
The following war was Sunset Riders on both Super Nintendo and Genesis.
Right.
Bury me with my money. on the GameCube, they published Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes, which is a really good version of that game. On the Sega Genesis, they had Rocket Knight Adventures.
Oh, Rocket Knight Adventures.
So you're skipping all around. Sparkster. Why did you have that random GameCube game in the middle?
I was just like following Nintendo platforms, then going back to other platforms. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah, Rocket Knight Adventures and Sparkster after that. Sparkster wasn't as good, but Rocket Knight Adventures were really good.
Yeah, and then they also, in 94, they did an exclusive Castlevania game for Genesis, Castlevania Bloodlines, which is awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And like today, people freak out when Tomb Raider goes Xbox exclusive, but it was like happening way back then.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
In the early 90s.
Mm-hmm. God, this game still looks good.
That game has great boss fights. Yeah.
I know, how could you keep up with a Castlevania story if you only owned one platform back?
It's true. On the original PlayStation that it's Suikoden.
Yeah.
Yep.
Beloved
underrated RPG.
Absolutely.
Suikoden 1 and 2, incredible. The other one's not quite as much.
Yeah.
But
I'll agree with that totally.
Suikoden, I don't know. I can't even say enough good things about that game.
Vandal Hearts was a great
strategy
RPG.
I didn't think that was going to be on this list, and I'm so happy that it is. Yeah,
yeah, I love that game. The first time you kill an enemy, and this like
blood
geyser of blood
everywhere.
Erupts, I was like, oh my god, this is awesome.
Whoa, this is the best game I've ever played.
Yeah. Of course, Symphony of the Night, the blueprint of the whole modern Castlevania. Yeah.
Fun fact, Justin's second favorite game ever made.
Well, second behind Super Metroid.
Yeah, which is also Super Metroid.
That's a pretty good one too, Justin.
It's the start of Symphony of the Night is the reason Metroidvania is a term.
Yeah.
That inverted castle, spoilers. Oh, that's like such an epic twist.
You have to say spoilers first. And then spoilers
it's been like 15 years.
I know,
it's fine.
I know.
Longer.
1999, the original PlayStation was when Silent Hill came out. Mm-hmm. And I remember those cutscenes were very impressive for the time.
Yeah, like, something else.
Super realistic facial animation. On the PlayStation 2, of course, Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. PlayStation 3, Metal Gear Solid 4. And the 42nd reason why we would miss Konami is the Konami code.
Of course.
You can use the Konami code on many websites.
Yeah.
There was a Gradius game where if you used it, it killed you.
Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, I think in most of the Gradius games, if you used it once, you would get 30 lives.
Yeah.
If you entered it a second time, you would die.
You would die.
That was I think several of the games were actually like that. So I'm very sad though. The one game that I had in my back pocket.
Which one?
It's not on there.
Stinger?
Really?
Can I kiss you right now?
God! It's really funny. I was thinking about that because we were going through all those classic shmup games.
Yeah, yeah.
And Stinger is the one that really sticks out to me because it's such it's one of those games you get as a gift when you're a kid.
Yeah.
It's the only way to get it because no one walked around the store and was like, I want Stinger.
Right, because it's got these weird spaceships on the front with boxing gloves for hands.
The game starts with this guy that looks exactly like Dr. Wily and he gets in a spaceship and he just like, with his eyebrows and he goes into space and you're like, thanks for the story?
Yeah, the whole thing's this weird acid trip up in the clouds with you shooting bells and birds and all these weird... It's part of the Parodius series.
Shot in the dark. Guess who the first main boss of Stinger is?
I don't remember.
Take a guess. Name anything in the world.
A Whopper.
It's a watermelon that shoots seeds at you. Why? Because why not?
Because why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Parodius was all... They took the Gradius concepts and ideas and just kind of...
I can't believe it. That's so funny.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was aware of Stinger. I was trying to pick games that I thought at least somebody would have heard of, but I didn't realize
Stinger was so blue. This is the only room in the world where there's two people who remember Stinger.
Including at Konami.
Exactly. They're like, what?
I don't know. Because I liked Parodius too, and there was Sexy Parodius also.
Yep.
Although I don't know if that was actually released over here. But that is just a small sample of what Konami...
What a legacy.
Right?
Yeah, unbelievable.
Produced over the years.
Well, then it's crazy that you can do so much good. Like, you can do everything right. Just hit home runs decade after decade. But if you have, like, a few bad years in a row, it's like, it's such a tenuous business that you can be in big trouble. It doesn't matter what you did for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
In particular right now, right? It's like you could dominate the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
But in 2015, you screw up once.
Yeah.
And that's
what I mean.
Yeah. It's because of the economics of scale, you know.
Yeah, think about how expensive Metal Gear Solid 5 must be.
Yeah.
Like all the years that game has been in development, the production values are through the roof. Like,
if one of those 10 games they released in 1987 didn't do well, and I'm sure one or two of them or five of them didn't.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure they were fine, but you
Stinger,
can't.
Stinger sold 25 million copies.
On launch day.
On launch day.
Yeah.
People bought NESs for it.
A lot of people hated watermelons back then.
All right, moving on. Batman Arkham Knight. Highly anticipated game coming in just a couple months. Today, we got word on its season pass details. The season pass costs $40 on its own. Now, there is a premium edition of the game that includes the season pass. However,
this is ridiculous.
The premium edition is $100,
which is
just the game plus the season pass.
What a deal!
Not much
what
of a
bargain.
Deal there. The season pass, we don't know the details, but we know it's supposed to include 6 months worth of content.
Right, whatever that means.
To be fair, the Batman DLC has been pretty solid.
That's true. Let's put that in.
Some people think that it's too expensive. Season Pass is getting out of hand.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys are aware of this though, that both Black Ops 2 and Black Ops 3's Season Pass is $50.
Wow. Nuts. Really? Yeah. Is that true?
It's just nuts.
Yeah.
That's another game.
Yeah,
it's another game. Basically, it's like basically another. So now they're getting you to pay twice the amount of money, basically, for video games.
Yeah, we don't know anything about they just said the amount of content, right? We don't know anything about what it's
going to be. You'll be getting content for 6 months after release, so.
They've explained it in vague terms. Oh, it'll be advanced challenge maps and, you know, skins, and they have not said anything specific about it. And that's the big problem I have with it, more than the price. It's the fact that, you know, you're putting a pretty large price tag on something and telling me that it's part of this premium experience, but you're not telling me what that experience is or why I should care about it.
I read the news story for this today, and I said the same thing to myself almost into the camera, where I was like, wait, what? Because they're like, yeah, but we can't really say what it is yet, but we promise you it's going to be good. And I'm like, that doesn't mean anything to me. Like, for that kind of money especially. Like, I do not understand, games are becoming more and more expensive, and you need to offset those costs.
To make.
In some capacity, to figure out a way to sell a game that, I mean, games should be probably $80. No one wants to hear.
That's what I was going
to
say, is how long have games been $60?
Right. Too long.
Forever, right. Too almost. Long. Like, they've been $60 since, like, I paid more than that in the PS1 and 64 era. Mm-hmm. So, they've been...
Beyond Oasis, $80 on the Sega Genesis.
Yeah, I think I paid Star 2 on the Sega Genesis.
I think I paid $90 for Mortal Kombat Trilogy on the N64.
Yeah. I paid $90 for Clay Fighter 33 in the third.
Wow.
And that game was a turd.
But even though those are exceptions because they're cart games and they're expensive to manufacture, but even outside of that, games have been $60 since the original Xbox and, you know, in the 360. So, there's inflation, so $60 is not $60 anymore. It's 40-some. And B, games are more expensive to make than ever. And C, like, they're not really, like, a lot of people compare it to the movie business, but movies, release in theaters, then they release on DVD, and then they sell the rights to HBO, and then they sell the rights to cable, and then Netflix. Yeah. They make money on it, like, 5 times,
also,
and game makers don't.
Ticket prices have been slowly rising over the last 15 years, whereas for video games, they have not.
Like, so that disc is the only place they make their money.
Yeah, it's the only place they make their money, except for, you know, they're really trying to get season passes.
So I feel like if the core game is still $60, and it feels like it's worth $60 to me, I'm okay paying that, knowing that I can skip all the season pass stuff. Because if it's like challenge rooms and like reskins and different Batmobiles and stuff like that, that's all cool, but it seems like optional to the core content.
Right.
Whereas if they start like paywalling a ton of story stuff and I can't buy it, you know, a la carte, and I have to pay $40 for it, then I have a problem with it. I also do have a problem with like you pointed out, the way they're sort of saying like, it's $60 plus $40 as our special edition. That's not a deal. That's like if I gave you a special edition $15 that was just a $10 bill and a $5 bill.
there's always two ways to think about it. Like games like Call of Duty or Halo will sell usually a set of 3 maps for $10. That's kind of the standard. Mm-hmm. And that's a good deal in my opinion. You play a lot of multiplayer, you get new maps, they're usually very intricate and balanced. Sure, that's worth, you know, I spent $6 on lunch today. $10 for 3 maps is worth it. But that's not worth 1/6 of the game.
Right.
Like, so 1/6 of the game is way more than just 3 multiplayer maps. And so DLC doesn't stack up favorably against buying the full game when you measure it out that way.
And then based on the kind of content that they're telling us is going to be in there, I mean, look at this. In this case, it's $40 to $60. It's 4/6 of the game.
So
and you're talking about challenge maps?
Dollar for dollar, for this to be the same value, it would have to be 2/3 the amount of game the base game is.
Right.
But I really don't think that's a knock against DLC as it is $60 being an incredible value for most sort of AAA games that come out.
No, it's not a knock against DLC. It's a knock against their DLC. Because if you look at what like Nintendo just did with Mario Kart,
it's incredible.
Which is basically put out a fourth of the game for $10 or whatever.
I think that's the best DLC ever.
Yeah.
It's up there.
I think so. I mean,
that's a sheer value.
You have four new cups, you have like 8 new characters, 8 new carts, like all for like I think it was $10 or something if you bought it all together. That's a good deal.
Here's our look at season passes. I beat Far Cry 4.
Yeah.
That's the only AAA game I've beaten in the past 6 months. So I'm totally going to play Batman Arkham Knights. I'll spend a good amount of time with it. Will I beat it? I have no idea if I will ever be able to beat that game.
Did you?
Much less ever explore any of its extra content. So,
Did you do the Yeti stuff in Far Cry?
I didn't even do that extra stuff.
Yeah, I didn't either. And like, I don't know if I would have had I bought the season pass just, beforehand.
There's not enough time
but I do know
to
that,
play all the games.
No, there isn't. But I do know this, that like the Yeti stuff was interesting to me because it was single player, and that's how I played most of Far Cry. Mm-hmm. But they put out a bunch of like multiplayer arena challenge map stuff, and I had no interest in that stuff. So had I bought the season pass from the jump, I would just be out $30 on the blind hope that most of that stuff was single player.
That's why you have to choose. The season passes are usually a little bit cheaper, right? They're trying to get you to buy in now to save, you know, $10 or whatever if you buy all the stuff individually. But you have to spend that money blind more often than not. So for me, I charge whatever you want for DLC, and I'll choose if I want to buy it. But I would rather spend a few more dollars later to know what I'm buying than spend a bunch of money now blind.
Which brings me to a question, what's it gonna be down the line, right? Like, once we know what all of it is, will it all be available a la carte? What are those prices gonna be? Are people gonna be penalized for waiting?
Right. So if this is saving, then it could be even more. It could be like $50 worth of, you know, missions and challenge maps and stuff.
Well,
like
I was
that.
Like, I was all hopped up on Star Wars last week after Star Wars Celebration.
Hopped up on the Star Wars.
Yeah, it was right back in me. And I went on my PS4 and I saw the Battlefront pre-order deal, which is basically like you spend 60 or whatever bucks now and you pre-buy the game and then they give you a bunch of stuff, which is basically like going to GameStop and getting a pre-order bonus of a bobblehead or whatever, a skin or something like that. But a bunch of this stuff is paywalled behind that pre-order. And like that's a game I'm interested in, but I don't know nearly enough about it yet to kind of really know where it's going to land. Like Batman, I'm kind of like, all right, this is their third or fourth or fifth of these.
Well, the third one made by Rocksteady.
Rocksteady's third Batman game in just a few years. I know what I can expect. So I can kind of get an idea of how long that game's going to be, how the combat's going to be, what it's going to look and feel like. So I kind of get that. But like a lot of times we're just buying blind and we're just jumping in on something on the off chance that it's going to be amazing. And like that worries me because now content is being paywalled behind that buying blind. I might not be able to get certain parts of Battlefront until I pay that $60 today, and I'm not going to know until this fall if that game's really worth my money.
And that's the problem with pre-order culture, is that they know that people are losing reasons. With the advent of digital, people are losing reasons to want to pre-order their games, so they're trying to create reasons because they want to make sure people get their money down and get bought in and get their game before dissenting opinions kind of spread people know they don't want it.
It's really, really, really important for retailers, pre-orders are, because that determines, it's impossible for a game stop to know how many copies of a game to get. Either you're stuck with hundreds that you can't sell, or you're sold out and you're not getting more for a month.
Yep. When I worked at GameStop, that was a big deal.
So they're really incentivized
initial buy.
And like I get that. Like I understand their motivation for it. I get all of it. But digital, like it's just there's no benefit. There's no benefit to the consumer, to the company. Like
there's a great benefit.
But you can preload it, Justin.
That's the benefit to the consumer, is that you can preload a game that would otherwise take you 24 hours to download because it's like 50 gigs.
Okay, so I shouldn't say no benefit, but very
the benefit to the company is that they have your money. And whereas GameStop, I could walk into GameStop and go, here's $5 for this game, and then a month later be like, I'm out, and come back, take my $5 back and put it on something else.
Yeah, that's why I think, that's what I'm trying to illustrate, is that that's why I have more of a philosophical problem with digital pre-orders.
Yeah, it's tough, because I can put down $60 for Battlefront today. And that's the thing, I don't think you can pre-order with $5 down on a game digitally. I think you have You have to go all in. Mm. So I can pay $60 for Battlefront today, and then 4 months from now, reviews start trickling in. They're like, this game's bad, and I'm like, what do I do? I have to call Sony customer service and be like, I read a review on IGN and I don't want to download this anymore. And they're like, sorry, you already bought it.
Don't do that. You need to have a really, really, really good reason to pay for something in full, non-refundable, before you see any reviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're trying to give people those reasons, but I don't think they're good enough reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
We have an email on this subject from Big Tony Style.
Big Tony Style.
Big Tony Style. Only style that matters.
Wants to know, what's the best DLC pack or expansion you've ever played? I'm currently playing through I see MK and I think Mortal Kombat, but he means Mario Kart 8 DLC packs and 200cc mode, and I must say I'm thoroughly impressed how it has reinvigorated my interest in the game. Altano was just saying he agrees with Big Tony Style.
200cc is actually, I think it's just it's a free update. It's not even part of the DLC, so you don't have to buy into that to unlock that mode. The only way to get it, you have to get a cup third place or higher on every 150cc in the game, which is kind of hard if you're not that great at that game. That is a great deal. Like we were talking about it before. The reason I love it is it gives me an excuse to go back to that game every few months and sort of revisit it and go, wow, this is probably one of the most perfect video games Nintendo has made, outside of the really bad battle mode in it, which is still inexcusable. Well,
yeah. I like that combination of free and paid.
Yeah.
Like, you get this, everybody gets this 200 mode, but there's also new courses that you gotta buy, but they're really elaborate and huge.
Yeah, and they were out the same day, so it was sort of like, it brings you in for 200, and while you're there, you're like, hey, there's more stuff here. Mm. And a lot of the courses are great. They're remakes of old, like the ones on GBA, which like always looked bad, and now they're full 3D, like they look beautiful. So yeah, I think that's one of the best ways to handle it, because the core game is still fantastic, but if you want more stages, they're there for just a few bucks.
Mario Kart's way up there. For me, it's probably, I mean, I know there's better examples, but what's jumping into my head is Skyrim had really, really good, huge, elaborate DLC packs.
Yes.
An entire new giant landmass to explore, as if that's what that game needed.
Bethesda, in general, their games, I feel like, Fallout as well.
So Skyrim's final, Vince, remind me, what's the final DLC pack called? Where you go to the island of Solstheim and...
Nope, it's not in my head.
Where that one is especially impressive because it adds a whole new quest line, but it not only does it add this new area to explore, but it's as densely packed as the rest of Skyrim is. So there's inns to go in and side quests to pick up and people to talk to, and dudes just hanging out that has his own little story that, like, what percentage of people are ever going to find this guy on the docks and talk to him? And it was like $15, and I'm like...
They did the same thing with Oblivion and Fallout 3, just these massive, massive sprawling add-ons that added entirely new explorable areas.
It's from like the era of expansion packs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like that, because I feel like a lot of story, first of all, story DLC is way less common nowadays than I think something like multiplayer maps.
They usually fake it. It usually feels like stuff that was carved out of the main game and then put back in. Whether that's fair or not, that's how it feels. And Skyrim stuff did not feel that way.
I thought what they did for, what was it, Infamous? Last year or this year?
That was actually really cool. First Light
standalone, right?
Yeah, it was a standalone like package that was.
Became standalone, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically that lives in that same universe, but has you playing entirely different things.
It was one of the characters who was kind of like a side, not a side character, but she was, you know, one of the characters you meet during the main game, and everyone kind of unanimously agreed that she was probably the most interesting character.
Yeah, because she's a crazy hoarder woman that lives in a billboard. She was great.
Who's kind of a sniper.
What's her name, Neon or whatever?
Yeah. Her name is Neon.
It's a video game.
The couple that always stand out to me are Undead Nightmare.
Yeah.
Yep.
For Red Dead Redemption, obviously. And then there are really good ones for Dishonored, where you play as one of the bad guys from the main game.
Yeah, I guess like Lost in the Damned counts too, right? For GTA.
GTA's a really good. Are we still getting GTA 5 story DLC? It's been so long.
We heard a long time ago that they were doing that.
It's out on PC now, so maybe they're finally gonna.
Yeah, they probably wanted to get all of that out there.
If we're gonna talk about story DLC, though, I think that Left Behind, for Last of Us has to be part of that conversation.
Yeah, that was great, and that was the reason I don't really like story DLC a lot, because it just feels so small in comparison. Like actually physically the environments are so tiny. But I liked that because you're kind of revisiting an older environment.
Yep.
But from a different perspective. So, and it actually weaves in new environments and old environments, and it weaves right into the story, which was really smart of sort of being like, this is how you played this game as Joel, and now you're playing as Ellie from the flip side.
Provides a whole different context for that character too. Very, very, very powerful.
I think it's crazy that the first DLC big controversy that I remember is horse armor in Oblivion. Everyone, it became like a meme for years, horse armor, it still is. But now, that's what people want. They're like, I want, like, let me pay a dollar to customize my character.
It's so odd.
Like, I just want a cosmetic thing. I don't want to be able to pay to get ahead in the game. I just want to pay for something that looks cool. But back then, everyone gave them so much crap for it, but it's really flipped since
then. My friend called me up a couple years ago, and he's like a kind of casual gamer, and he was just like, hey, I'm playing that. Have you played that game Godfather for 360?
Wow, that's a deep
cut. And I'm like, yeah, the EA game.
Yeah,
and
I played that game too.
I'm like, I'm actually playing it on Wii now because someone had given me a copy on Wii, and it was like you could strangle people with the Wii remote. It was pretty interesting. But that game was one of those like special edition sort of ports where it had everything in it, and they didn't really have a pay model to buy anything. So he was like, oh, did you get the Gatling gun or whatever? I'm like, yeah, it was really cool. I found it in this level. And he was like, I had to pay $4.99 for that. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, how many guns did you buy? And he's like, I bought all the extra guns in the game. And they were like a couple bucks each. He had spent like $20 or $30 on guns for like a movie-based game.
Wow.
And back then that shocked me, but nowadays it's like totally common. It happens all
the
time.
So he's the guy. He's the guy that's like, who's doing all this stuff?
Yeah,
he's the whale.
He had a tough time with a mission, and he was like, I'll spend $5 to get out of this predicament right now. You know, like I do it on mobile all the time where I'll be playing a game that's free, but it's $1 to get rid of ads, or it's $1 to like double the coins you're getting, or some dumb stuff like that.
Yeah. Coin doublers and paying to get rid of ads are more reasonable to me than other shenanigans on mobile.
Yeah, on your point, though, about the horse armor, real quick, it's totally true. That used to be something that people didn't care about at all, and I certainly still don't care about.
They hated it. They were so mad.
But then you look at a game like Dota 2 that literally survives off. That is the only thing they sell. They do not sell accelerators. Yeah. They don't sell, like, get double XP. They don't do that stuff. They sell cosmetic
things. Why would I spend money on this? It's pointless. It doesn't help me get ahead in the game. And now it's, why are you letting people spend money to get ahead in the game? This is baloney.
I mean, we were so mad about that we didn't notice how often it started happening everywhere. And even it started happening on, like, the Xbox Live avatar marketplace, where it wasn't even for your game. It was just for, like, the guy that's in the corner while you're watching Netflix has a Star Wars shirt on because you paid for it.
The famous example is, I think it was $3 to get a wall from Gears of War.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because of the cover-based mechanics of Gears of War. Yeah, yep. I think that's right. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Jack Martin did.
Hey, Jack.
He says, hey, guys.
Hey, Jack.
I just wanted to say that 20 questions is an awesome addition to the show. I'd love to see it appear in future episodes. Well, Jack.
Oh,
I hope,
God.
I hope our contestants are ready.
Oh, jeez.
Vince, you know how 20 questions works?
I have not participated in it before. How does this format of it work?
Yes or no questions?
I've pre-selected three games. You each have one game. So we'll go one at a time down the line. And you have 20 questions to ask me to figure out what the game is. And they can only be yes or no questions.
We need like a jingle to go with this. Like, I gotta name the game, and then Brian screws up and doesn't know which. Yeah, this is fun for everyone but me. I was really bad at this last time.
No, but like, if you get lost in the question,
oh my God.
Like, yeah. I don't know.
I feel like I'm either gonna be really good at this or really, really bad at it.
We've done this twice so far, and so far everyone has chosen the game. Named the game, so no one has lost.
Oh, nope. Thanks for putting the pressure on me, Dave.
I didn't lose last time, I came close.
You got it, you
had like 18,
18 questions. All right, Justin, we'll start with you.
All right. Did this game originally release before 2000?
Yes.
Okay, did this game originally release on a Nintendo platform?
Yes.
Did this game originally release on the NES?
Yes.
Was the developer Nintendo?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
You're playing this really smart.
Yeah.
I wanted that. That's my... I love this one.
Is it a Mario game?
It's not in like the Mario series.
Is it one of the Super Mario games?
No.
Okay. But that was a little. See, cause this is when you get in the mid.
I think I know what it is.
You have plenty of questions to go.
But now I'm confused by your hesitance.
So get like a follow up. Get like a clarifying follow up
from what I got. Is the character Mario? Does he appear in this game? Is his name Mario?
With 90% certainty, I can say yes.
Is it? Well, wait, because is it Punch Out?
Can you be more specific?
Is it Mike Tyson's Punch Out?
Yes.
Wow!
So I knew that Mario was in it, but I don't know if they actually called him Mario.
I don't think he's. That's why I asked that question. I should have just asked Punch Out.
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't think he is Mario. I think it's like
just
a cameo.
The ref. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Don Kling's in the audience too. So. That's a new record. You guessed in 7.
And it would have been 6. I'll take 7.
Okay. All right, good job. Brian, you ready?
Was it a game released before January 1st, 2000?
No.
Great.
You're fine.
Is it a... This is when it gets hard. There's so many more platforms after this.
Yeah.
You got to ask a question where there's like 2 consoles back there.
No, ask about console manufacturer.
Is it a first party game?
No.
See, that could have opened a lot of doors, and now it created a lot of dead ends. was this game a PlayStation game?
Not, I mean, Not at first, not originally.
Okay. Is this an Xbox game?
Yes.
Okay.
Originally.
The original Xbox.
The original release was on Xbox.
Okay. The Xbox. I'm trying to get you to say stuff. Not wasting questions. Is it a shooting game?
Like, by definition? Like,
is it a game where you primarily
are you asking me if the genre is shooter?
Yes.
No.
An Xbox game where you don't shoot
games. There weren't many of them. That was a sound a lot, actually.
Not a first party.
Actually,
game.
I actually have to clarify something with Justin. Justin, okay. Originally, this was originally Xbox?
They're yelling no in the controller.
No.
It wasn't then?
No.
Okay, I give you back. I thought it was a timed exclusive on Xbox, but it wasn't, so I take a question away. What are we on, five?
What are these shenanigans?
This is a.
We took a question away. Where are we in my brain?
So what do we know? It's after 2000.
Yeah.
It's
multi-platform.
Multi-platform game.
Yeah.
That's not a shooter.
Okay. And we don't know what platform it's on.
Well, it's multi-platform. It appeared on Xbox and PlayStation based on your questions.
I thought at first it was just Xbox, but I guess I'm wrong.
Let
me double check.
It's not a shooter.
Not strictly, no.
Is it a 3D game?
Yes.
Good question.
Damn, this is so hard.
That's like the most quiet I ever have heard you.
I know.
Vince, you got some ideas?
No, not really. But you got plenty of questions. Don't panic yet. Don't panic.
Okay.
I'm being your coach. I'm like, you're fine. There's 20 of these questions. You've only asked, what, five, six?
You are right.
Okay, I was right. You guys are screwing me.
Yeah.
It was originally an Xbox game.
Okay. And it's a 3D game on the Xbox.
Yes.
Originally on Xbox. And
not a first-party game.
I feel like we need to clarify that point as well.
But how did he phrase the question?
Is it an Xbox game? What did you mean by that?
What do you mean? That's a loaded question.
It was, yeah.
All right, now okay, so it's a multi-platform game.
Yeah.
But it had,
that's all you need to, it's a multi-platform game.
Is it multiplayer?
No.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Is it, Conker's Bad Fur Day?
No.
Why did you make that face?
I don't know. I wish I didn't know the answer.
I wish I did.
Ask about genres.
I know it's sort of shooting-ish, but not.
Yeah.
Is it a platformer?
No.
Is it a racing game?
No.
See, but you're on the...
Don't tell me to ask about genres.
You're eliminating huge swaths of game with those no's. No's aren't bad. No's are okay.
Is it a Grand Theft Auto game?
No.
Is it an open world game?
No.
I would say no.
I have to admit, this is pretty tough.
This is really hard. This is not just me,
not
right?
Not just you. This is pretty tough.
Do you have any suggestions for questions? You can be my lifeline.
I was gonna eliminating genres is really good. I'm racking my brain for, you know what? Just see if you can ask a question about what kind of main character it was. Like, was it a ninja? Was it a soldier? Was it a, like, I don't know. That might.
All right.
That might. I don't know. That might narrow things down a little bit.
Was it a cartoony game?
No.
Was it rated M?
Yes.
Okay. That was a really good question.
Thank you.
That was a really good question.
So it's M-rated Xbox game. It's not open world.
Not really a shooter.
Not multiplayer. And it's not cartoony.
Also, like my remembrance of like the big games on the original Xbox is
there's like
is
brute
thin.
Force.
Help them.
Yeah, no, so
brute,
it's
thinking,
a game that
for a while I was thinking about brute force.
So yeah. this is a game from the Xbox family.
Yeah, we said it was on Xbox.
It was a miscommunication.
Maybe not the original Xbox, but it is on an Xbox.
Oh, so it's on an Xbox platform, but not necessarily the Xbox.
Correct.
Okay, you got to nail down the platform then. That's what you got to do.
I agree.
Is it an Xbox 360 game?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I knew that. I didn't have to waste that question.
Because in my head, I thought we were the whole time. I thought they meant it was an Xbox.
No, they were hinting us to be like it's not that. Is it? What's that cameo?
I was just thinking that, but no, they said it's not cartoony.
It's also not first party.
And it's.
This is so hard.
This is why really do tough.
I can't even. You can get hints from Vince.
Vince doesn't know the answer. I can't get hints from him.
Yeah, but I feel like I can't say anything
anymore. Okay. You got anything?
It's got Stonewall Hatfield over here not giving anything away.
This is good.
Do I need to throw a hint?
Yeah, I think
like
you need
to throw. They said it's not a shooter, and they said it was multi-platform.
You eliminated platformer and racing game.
Right.
But there's other genres. I think you're going to be on a good track.
There's a major genre you guys haven't hit on.
Oh, right. Right. Can I ask the question for you?
It's not first person, because it's not a shooter. What else would you do?
Oh, wait, but you're saying it's but you said it's
cross-platform. Is it a fighting game?
Is it a fighting game? No.
But you said it's cross-platform. It eventually was cross-platform. Man.
Is it a party game?
No.
Throwing questions in the trash.
What's the biggest video game genre, probably?
Well.
Besides shooter, which you already eliminated. The biggest one left.
Action, is what I would say.
Nah.
That's the biggest.
I mean, RPG is what I would think, but.
No. What did you do with your face? Is it an RPG?
Yes.
What?
Oh. I'm trying to think of cross-platform RPGs on the 360 that started as a 360. But it's not multiplayer. God.
I didn't think this was going to be.
It's an RPG that is eventually cross-platform but came to the 360 first. Doesn't have multiplayer.
What the?
But is not cartoony.
These are all true facts.
What? What cross-platform RPGs did the Xbox get first? Xbox 360 get first?
Indeed.
So I'm thinking...
Skyrim? They didn't get that first. That wasn't a... Was that just...
He said not open world.
That's right.
He said not open world. So that's out of the table. Is the game... How many questions do we have left?
Four left.
Oh, my God. Is it a Japanese developed game?
No.
It's a good question, though.
This is freaking hard.
Who makes Western RPGs? It's not Japanese developed.
Wait. Western RPG. Right. It has to be a Western RPG on 360. A Western RPG that's not open world? What are you talking about? But it's not strictly a shooter.
I think you'll agree with me. It's not considered open world.
I wouldn't. Yeah. I like being the judge. I'm with Damon on this one.
I really got nothing.
Like, who are the RPG makers in our world that we
BioWare?
Love?
The big Western is BioWare. BioWare and Bethesda. But you said it's not open world.
Well, so you know it's not Bethesda.
So might as well burn another question. Is it a BioWare game?
Brian's playing right now.
Is it a BioWare game?
Yes. Two left. Two left. Let's make a dash for her home plate. Try to steal home.
You know what platform it is. You know who the developer is.
I know, but that doesn't stop the fact that there are large chunks of my brain.
Oh my God. What? Oh my God. Are you freaking kidding me?
What do you mean, am I kidding you?
You're the one that
took 18.
What is it?
Are you ready? Do you want me to finish this for you?
You can give me the question, I'll ask Damon.
Okay.
Like our parents are fighting. Is it Mass Effect?
Are you asking me if it's Mass Effect 1?
Sure.
No.
Is it Mass Effect 2?
Yes.
That
20 questions.
In what world is Mass Effect not a shooter?
It's an RPG.
It's an RPG.
It is a hybrid RPG shooter. Well, I mean, that's very misleading.
It's not a shoot. Like, I'm not trying to mislead you, but I'd like, a Call of Duty is a shooter, right?
Right. Sure.
Mass Effect is more of an RPG, right?
Absolutely. No, that's true, but it's like, especially Mass Effect 2 was so much less RPG than Mass Effect 1 was.
Isn't
it so much more shooter?
Mass Effect 2, you're primarily shooting things.
Your main mode of combat is shooting. The only mode of combat is shooting things.
Your primary mode of combat in Final Fantasy VI is hitting things with a sword, and that doesn't make it an action game. I will call Mass Effect an RPG.
That's because you're hitting things with a sword in a turn-based RPG.
Mass Effect is an RPG. I'm not saying it's not an RPG, but I'm saying...
I was not trying to mislead you. I just think it's more of an RPG than a shooter.
Sure.
I don't think I say, when I think, name some shooters, I don't think that Mass Effect.
But he also did ask if shooting was the main mode of action, though.
Yeah.
And you guys were like, no. So that threw me way off.
I think he asked if it's a shooter. I'm gonna go with
all
that.
Right, I'll take the L on that one. I'll get you next time.
You got it in 20 questions.
That's not winning. That's just barely being alive.
Like I said, you stole home.
You did.
All right, here we go. Here we go.
Vince.
Next up.
Last
go
one.
For it, Vince.
Now I'm terrified.
Let's try to keep it going here.
Yeah.
20 questions.
Okay. Was it made before January 1st, 2000?
No.
Okay.
Did you see this one?
No.
Is it on Sony platform? Is it on Sony platforms?
No.
Okay. Is it on Microsoft platforms?
Nope.
Okay. Is it... this might sound obvious, but is it on a Nintendo platform?
Yes.
Okay.
Damon's tricksy. You don't want to assume anything.
Is it a platformer?
No.
Okay. Was it exclusive to the platform it was released on for its entire life?
Yes.
Was it on GameCube?
No.
Before 2000.
It's after 2000.
After 2000. Yeah. It's exclusive to the platform it's on?
Okay. Was it on the Wii?
No.
Go ahead.
Is it on a portable device?
There we go.
Yes. Good. I didn't know if I was going to have to give a hint about that one.
First party, it's first party, right? Do we know that yet?
We don't know that yet.
Let's find out.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Is it a first party game?
Yes.
All right. Is it an RPG?
Okay, so I don't want you to...
It's Mass Effect 2.
Is it Mass Effect 2?
It is not... It's not a RPG in the classic sense that Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest is.
Okay.
So the answer is?
The answer is it has RPG elements, but
exactly.
It's not, strictly speaking, an RPG. Or it could be, in some way, can shoot as an RPG, but isn't actually one.
Mm-hmm. You can...
Is it on the DS?
No.
Good question.
So it's a...
3DS game, presumably.
So it's a...
Or GBA.
After 2000.
Yeah, when did the GBA come out?
Oh, yeah, good call.
Yeah, it's a GBA or 3DS game.
Yeah, I totally would have.
Is it a 3DS game?
No.
Oh, so Nintendo made GBA game, never came to any other platform.
It could be.
With mild RPG elements.
I want another answer.
Wow.
I think I know what this is.
It's easier when you're not the one, like, in it.
No, it's easier when it's a Nintendo game. Everyone else got.
I already asked if it was a first-party game. The answer was yes.
Yeah.
I want to see.
You had a taste of what it's like to know.
Is it? I already asked that. You said it doesn't. It has some elements, but not all.
This is tough because I would start drilling into art style because otherwise you're not.
Right.
Which you can kind of actually guess what the art style is.
Is it a top-down perspective?
Yes.
That's a good question.
Ooh.
Is it a Zelda game?
Nope.
I know. See, here's what... The reason... not to be a backseat 20-question player, but you're playing Damon as much as you're playing actual 20 questions, and you got to know, what is Damie like? Maybe that's why it's because I know you so well.
It's the bro effect.
Yep.
Bro effect.
Can I tell you what I was thinking?
What were you thinking?
Fire Emblem? Although pretty straightforward.
I call that pretty straightforward, you know, that's in the RPG category, but
I would not.
Okay, so
it's a strategy RPG.
What's that?
It's a strategy RPG.
Yeah, that's totally part of the RPG, you know. I mean, my only guess is, since you guys seem to be smugly...
I don't know the answer. I'm just saying.
So I would say, is it Final Fantasy Tactics?
No. First party.
First party. So is it Fire Emblem?
No. Man.
Here we are.
We lit two on fire right there. How many questions are left?
Three.
I got three left.
There's three left?
Yeah.
Is it turn-based?
Yes.
Good question. Maybe.
Advance Wars.
Yes. Oh.
Just
really.
Nice. You're right. It's not an RPG at all.
Strategy, yep. RPG. Yeah,
not an RPG at all. Totally a strategy game. Turn-based strategy game.
Wow, yep. Good work on that one.
Yeah.
Damn.
All right. Woo, doctor.
Doctor.
Just barely making it there. Justin did in seven. You think you could have guessed Mike Tyson's punch out in seven questions?
That was pretty good.
I don't think so.
That wasn't only just that, you know, to be not fair. You know what that was? That wasn't just so much like, whoa, how did he know that game? Because that's a common game. But you know the exact right questions to ask. That was really good.
I know. I feel like I'm one round away from being like. Like, you know, was it released on this platform? Yes, Star Fox 64.
Yeah. Because where you were in the point of your game, I was like, oh, it's got to be Yoshi's Cookie, because that's a weird one, and Damon's going to try to screw us up today.
I thought maybe Wario Woods.
Yes, that's what I was thinking too. I was also thinking Dr. Mario.
Sure, yeah.
But those are the earlier games.
Yeah, but for me.
Oh, for you.
For him, right, for him, saying. I was thinking, when it was like Mario is in it, but not in it. A Mario game, I was like, wow, so that could be a few things. So.
He also, like, he was the judge, or the guy in tennis.
Yep.
He played in baseball. Uh-huh. Like, they could have gone a lot of different ways.
They got around.
Yeah, lucky.
That ran long, so we're almost out of time, but I want to answer one legitimate listener mail before we run. This is from Mike. He says, now that Konami has lost Silent Hills, I have no hope the series will ever be good again. Starting with halfway through part 4, the laughable burping nurses was the beginning. The series has been in a tailspin and is now all but dead to me. My question is, what are some series that you have no faith will return to their peak form?
It's such an easy answer to this. Sonic is just...
Oh, well, yeah.
Sonic's a lost... The problem with Sonic... With the Sonic franchise, and it pains me to say it because I love the first three games, but I think every time Sega finds a foothold, every time they figure out something that works, they find a mechanic, they find a structure or a gameplay hook or a design idea for Sonic that works, instead of like locking that down and then building on it, they're like, okay, next Sonic game, let's try something totally different. And like, that's great when you're trying to create something new, but when you're trying to return a franchise to like its former glory, I feel like whatever you find footing in, you have to like sink your teeth into and then build off of that. Yep. And instead, every time they get a couple of hits, they just reset the board and try again. And I'm like, why don't you at least hold on to the things you got right?
Yeah, Sonic hasn't really worked in a very, very long time. Yeah. It's one of those, like, it was weird. We were talking about, you brought up Frogger before, and it reminded me how...
You think there'll never be a Frogger?
For sure, but Frogger is totally one of those like one-hit wonders where it worked out the gate, and then every time they've tried it since, it didn't work.
You got that Crossy Road, though.
And then you look at Crossy Road, and like they're just like, we know what to do with this. And they just snatched it and ran with it.
Yeah, take us from here. Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Yeah, so Sonic, what would you say?
That was actually probably mine, but I'm going to go even worse and probably say something like F-Zero. I don't think we're going to ever get one.
GX was so good.
Yeah, but
imagine how beautiful it would look on the Wii.
I know. I mean, I'm like playing the Mario Kart F-Zero levels with the Captain Falcon's big head inside of the big blue racer.
It's just mean.
Yeah, it's just mean. It's about as close as you can get because they're beautiful, especially in 200cc. And it's close, but like F-Zero has always been a different game. It's about risk and reward and death and exploding and stuff like that, which you don't really get in Mario Kart. You're always just dropped back on the track. Yeah. But I think that sort of... Well, that magical moment where Sega and Nintendo were collaborating, Sega was kind of at like the apex of their arcade abilities, and Nintendo was just doing awesome stuff on the GameCube, and they came together and made F-Zero. I don't know if we'll ever get anything like that again. Like, if at best we might get like a portable game or something, or a Nintendo Land mini game, but we're never going to get a full-fledged F-Zero like I want.
What do you think?
I wouldn't say I have no faith, because, you know, I do hope to see both of these someday, but the most painful to me is that we don't get Grandia games anymore. Best RPG battle system ever made.
I totally agree with you. Yeah.
And and we just because it came up earlier, I really, really liked Suikoden, and I think Konami is, they released that DS1 or 3DS1 that was sort of so-so. And
Suikoden Teocles.
Yeah, not a great game. I feel like there's more 2D games that didn't make the, like, they were 2D big hits, and then made the transition to 3D sort of shakily, and then went away, but I can't, you know, my brain won't think of any right now.
I mean, there's, speaking of Konami, there's, like, Castlevania, like, are we ever going to get another Metroidvania Castlevania game?
Yeah.
But the other bigger one I was going to say, that I hate to say, is Resident Evil.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we're going to get that sort of, like, Resident Evil 2, Resident Evil 4 level of AAA retail release that's more about survival horror than it is about dumb action.
Yep. Yeah, and that's the problem. The franchise audience split in half at some point, and there's no way to really pull that back in.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the best-selling Resident Evil games are the big, dumb action ones. And then you have people like us sitting on the side going, like, we miss Resident Evil 2 and Remake and 4, which was fantastic.
They should just have a spin-off. They should have, like, Resident Evil Spooky Town and Resident Evil Shoot 'em Up.
That's what Revelations is
Shooty
to
Town.
Them.
Shooty Town. Spooky Town. Town and Shooty Town.
Revelations is Spooky Town to them, and it's back to those roots. But it doesn't resonate with me the way Resident Evil 4 did, because I like mild action elements, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, that really bumps me out, man. Yeah, we'll probably just get another Resident Evil Call of Duty game, that's like 6.
Yeah, it's been so long since Resident Evil's felt like that quaint, schlocky, B-movie, charming kind of puzzle-based adventure game. It's become a totally bloated, action-y, just taking itself way too seriously, just kind of affair. Very sad.
Yeah.
Missed the way it was.
That's our show for you this week. Thanks for joining us. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Vince. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out. I shook you in my dream as hard as I could stand. When I stopped, you fell away. Pockets full of sand. Waking watching it decay, twitching in the net again, trying to get away. I'm living in between the pleasure and the pain, emblems glowing in the night, and melting in the rain.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.